Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4th of July sale and get 30% off paints and stains June 26th through July 6th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only, some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
I'm looking at the screen and suddenly there's this yellowish light, this disc that just kind of appears on the left-hand corner of the sky. And I'm thinking to myself, what the heck is that? And before I can hit the record button, as I'm pressing down, getting ready to press down on the record button, it's gone.
Travis Dean is a cancer survivor, engineer, and data scientist specializing in disaster communications recovery. Coming out of chemo in 2018, he began seeing the world and its data differently. Years of modeling hurricanes, pandemics, and large-scale crises while watching warnings go ignored pushed him to do something just a little bit differently. I saw the cows, and they knocked over your camera.
Well, it's absolutely amazing that, I mean, in the past 10 days, I started posting these educational videos, and as a result of these educational videos, people have been kind of swarming in. I went from 94 followers, which is very little, and I'm not like an influencer, to almost 1,000 now. Well, you know, people like the cows too, to be fair. You know, I mean, they like certain instruments too. Like they seem to be mad keen on the oboe and the clarinet. If you play an oboe and a clarinet in any of these music types, they adore them. But when it comes to trumpets, they really don't like trumpets for some reason. I don't know why.
We haven't even gotten into what you're doing. The Jackson Earth Restoration Program. Jackson is the name of a dog. That comes later. Obviously, you're qualified to know what's going on in the world in terms of climate change. That's why I wanted to talk with you more about your project and what you're doing. Give us a backstory. Let's start there.
Well, I was going through chemotherapy, and on my birthday, we had a hurricane come through in the panhandle of Florida, and it was Hurricane Michael. And I'd warned everyone in my team that this hurricane was going to hit this particular area, and they're like, no, let's just see what happens. And it did. Now I'm the only person qualified to set up this satellite system and to bring communications back online after a ground zero event. And here I am sitting in this chemo chair getting my infusion, and work calls me and they want me to deploy to this location. And I couldn't. There was just no way I could physically get myself out of this chemo chair and go to this location. So I had to end up talking people through the telephone using satellite phones. How to set up the equipment, how to operate the equipment, how to bring up communications. Meanwhile, I'm going through this chemo and I'm really sick. And I started thinking, man, if I survive this, there's got to be a better way of life. But at the same time, I was doing hurricane models, and I was going back, looking at data back to the 1800s, and I saw how the climate was changing so very fast. It's faster than most people even talk about on television or in the radio or the news. It is so much worse than we can even possibly imagine. So I started thinking to myself, what can I do? I've got a new lease on life. I've just finished my chemo. I want to do something that's meaningful, you know, something where people will actually listen. So there's no control that I have over other people. The only control that I had is over myself. So I decided, hey, I'm going to buy some property. I'm going to plant some trees, and I'm going to give my dog a nice big place to walk around on, and I'm going to sequester some carbon, and maybe that will make a difference, and maybe I can get other people to follow me. The sad thing is on the day that I got the deed to the property, because I paid cash for it, the day that I got the deed and I went out to visit the property, I was in a 4x4 Jeep, and I was making the final turn to get to the property, and I got stuck in a wash. Now, this is a 4x4. I should not have been stuck in a wash, but it felt like something was holding me down, and I'm scratching my head trying to figure out what to do. And then the phone rings. And I thought, aha, you know, there's not really a lot of really good cell signal out here. So maybe I should answer this phone call just in case I need to call someone for help. So I answered the phone call and it was a doctor. And I thought, you know, maybe it might've been related to me because I had cancer. But this doctor was telling me that it was my son who also shares my name. He's a junior, not a senior. And he's in the emergency room and he has a tumor that needs to be removed. They need to operate right away. Now, the reason that they're calling me, even though my son is an adult male, is my son also has schizophrenia. With schizophrenia, there's lots of complications. So they called me and I'm, yes, I'm not in the state, but please go ahead and perform the surgery right away. Save his life. So they went in, they did the surgery. He came out and we became kind of chemo sobbies because I could relate to some of the chemotherapy that he was going to go through and the cancer treatments that he would go through. But unfortunately, I was stage 3 and my son is stage 4. And the odds of surviving stage 4 over 5 years is only 15%. So during this time of taking him to chemo, we've been able to talk about the property and the things that I wanted to do with him and taking him out there to see the property, to enjoy the land and maybe plant some trees and do something together. We've had a lot of chances to communicate with one another. We've done a lot of healing. So we know that the time is coming and we know that he's going to pass, but we've had that very rare opportunity to kind of come together and heal our souls, so to speak. You know, when you're a teenager, you know, your parents are like, oh, you're a bad person. It's just teenage angst against their parents. And a lot of that stuff is gone. But unfortunately, he doesn't have anyone else. He has a family, you know, of other brothers from a different marriage, and everyone is afraid of his disease. His mental illness is very, very difficult to manage. And I'm really all he asked to get him off to chemo. But, you know, I'm a dad. Being a parent is a lifelong responsibility. And, you know, it's something that you don't take lightly. You don't just abandon it because it's hard. Anyway, I'm in this wash and I'm stuck. And suddenly after the doctor gets permission, this Jeep that I'm in drives out of this wash like it was on pavement. It was like something was holding me back. Something making me want to take this call. You've got to take this call. This is so important. This is super important. Do not move. So I took the call. And I think after taking that call, it probably saved his life. And we went on to the property and climbed up to the top. It's actually very high, high up in the Aquarius Mountains. And the bees started swarming around me like, hey, how's it going? You know, you're our friend. We're gonna be friends for a long time. The bees were very curious about me. I still, to this day, I don't quite understand why. They weren't harmful. They didn't hurt me. They didn't scare me. It's like they were kind of welcoming me to the property. It's, you know, maybe someone who's going to live there someday.
I like bees. As a matter of fact, we had a beehive for a while, and unfortunately we're in the city, and whenever they spray or do something funky like that, then sometimes it affects the bees and they don't last. What I experienced, though, was a real cool connection. And I knew when they were fading. It was a shift, a change. There's a wonderful buzzing sound, and it's not like a buzz you hear in your ears. It's you yeah. feel it. You feel it in your chest. You feel that vibration when it's a healthy hive. And I could feel that. But I felt it when it changed. And it was the most heartbreaking thing to know that there's nothing I could do. When the queen goes, then they're gone. And that's so learning about that and knowing, okay, we have to do something differently. So I've got flowers, I've got plants in the city that are supportive of and no pesticides of any kind, because I want to be able to say that whatever I have done, even though it's tiny, it's something that's proactive. And so when you're talking about those yeah. bees, I'm like, yes, yes, I know what they're doing. Yes, they like you.
Yeah. Yeah, we recently got a beehive dedicated to us by the author Nikki Moustaki. I don't know if you're familiar with her work, but she's written around 48 books, mostly on animals. She got wind of what we were doing, and she heard about the bees. Mm-hmm. So she donated this very nice beehive, and we have a nice little plaque on the beehive for it. It's been really, really nice to see every time we go up there to see it. We check the inside to see what the bees are doing and how they're acting
yeah.
and behaving and make sure everything's okay.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Okay. So let's get to the property. There's something about this property too, because you even, before you got there was a sense of what you were looking for. Tell us about that. Cause that's a huge element with this.
Well, my God, it seemed impossible. This property, getting this specific piece of property, I immediately fell in love with it. But every step of the way, I was challenged. There was always something. I would call the realtor. The realtor would say, hey, someone's coming out from California. They're going to look at the land. They're probably going to sign a deal. So there's no, it's probably going to be off the market. Don't worry. We'll show you some other properties. I start looking for other properties all over the state. I'm finding a few, maybe, but none of them had the same charm. I kept coming back to that same property over and over and over. I watched a video from the previous owner maybe 1,000 times on YouTube because I loved this property so much. There was just something about it kept drawing me to it. I became obsessed with this property, and I started dreaming about the property before I got it. I started dreaming about climbing hills and moving rocks and seeing these neat little children beings, these little things that are hiding out in some cave. And I thought, wow, this has really become quite an obsession. But I kept trying, and eventually I decided, you know what, I'm probably not going to get the property. I'm going to call the owner. I'm just going to tell him, hey, I'm visiting. I'm going around the entire state. I'm looking at other properties. I'd like to see it, even though it's probably not for sale. He said, well, the last offer fell through. We have another guy coming in. He's probably going to buy it, but yeah, you can go out and take a look at it. So I went out. I climbed the hills by myself, nearly stepped on a rattlesnake. My first visit there, a Mojave green rattlesnake. I was like 3 inches away from this snake. And I turned around and I looked, and he was just chilling out, just kind of sitting there like, hey, what's up? I'm not going to hurt you. But it scared me. I mean, I screamed. Fortunately, I'm out in the middle of nowhere, and I've got I'm screaming like a Yeti, you know, and I'm trying to climb in the other side of the Jeep, and the Jeep is rocking back and forth like a bear raiding camp, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All just to drive like 10 feet away from the snake, so it would be, a little bit further away. So
hell yeah.
I got my drone footage and I went and I just, this has got to be the place. So I told the owner, I said, I'd love to buy this property. He said, I tell you what, I'll give you the first chance to buy this property because this other person, he made an offer and it's something I could accept, but I told him that I would give you an opportunity to match. And I said, okay, fine. So I'm standing up at the top of this mountain and I'm looking at 160 acres all the way around. It's beautiful. And I'm thinking, how in the world am I going to buy this? I have to do this. And everything just clicked. Everything fell into place. The finances fell into place. I asked him to bring the price down. He brought the price down. I asked him for 30 days to close. He gave me that. Every single thing from there on just worked. And it became my property. Mm-hmm. And it was the proudest day of my life because, my life hasn't been very kind. I've lived through an awful lot of stuff. I've even been homeless, and for me, being a homeless person to owning 160 acres of land, that's a big deal, especially in my family.
The commitment has been made, and the little dream you had with the people. We talked before, and you gave me a description, and I wanted to get your feedback because what my image and what I felt was this little joy. These little bubbles of, and you said they always smile. So I gave you an image. And what is that image in the way that you view them? How does that image compare?
I was blown away. I mean, just from the very odd dream state image that I, or description that I was able to give you, to see that image was so close to perfection. So close. I mean, the only thing that I would say would be different is the clothing, but clothing is clothing. But every time I would have this dream, it became a repetitive dream night after night. I would see those little faces that you just presented to me. I would look inside of this cave and they had this weird sort of ability to kind of defy gravity. In other words, they could like walk on the ceiling of the cave or they walk along the walls on the cave. And just like you and I are walking upright on land, they could just walk anywhere they wanted. And in the dreams, I would always move the same boulder out of the way and I would see a cavern inside and I would look down and they would see me and they would smile. And without saying words, without, moving the lips or saying anything, they would greet me like they were happy to see me, like they had been trying to reach me, that they wanted me to be there, with them, that I had something to do and that, I was supposed to be on this property. It's just so strange. I'm not really part of that whole, scene, but there's just something about this place. It's just magical.
Okay. Well, there's something else too, that you put the cameras out there. Explain the camera. Cause this is tech stuff. So explain how you've got that set up.
I love the land so much that I wanted to put trail cameras out. And as a scientist, you want to look for things like erosion patterns. I want to look at wildlife. I want to see what's kind of out there. I'm not even thinking dream people at this point or golden-eyed children or golden-eyed people. In fact, I have a camera now called the golden-eyed camera sitting up on the top of the same hill where I had that dream. But I have cameras scattered all over the property to look for certain things that are happening on the ground. And they're triggered, they're activated, and they have acted really strangely. One time, the golden-eyed people camera, as I had it up on the hill, it's programmed to take video whenever it senses motion. Well, instead of taking video, it took a snapshot. Okay. Mm. So I look at a snapshot and it's just this blur of something like rushing in front of the camera. I have no idea what it is. I posted it on Blue Sky and people would remark and say, hey, that's the mighty desert squatch. I don't, you know, people being funny.
Yeah.
But I didn't know what it was. And then other cameras started acting the same sort of way. So I thought, well, maybe it's the frequency of the camera. So I checked the frequencies of the camera. I made sure everything had a good signal. I changed all of the batteries and made sure that the solar panels were good. Everything's set up. And they're supposed to trigger based on video and not take photographs. But every other week or so, they would act up. They would just take a photograph and cut off like the video. No video thing, not even giving it instructions to take a photograph. It would do it by itself.
Yeah.
So one day I'm monitoring the cameras and I'm looking. One of my favorite cameras is in the center of the property. And if you're monitoring the camera actively, it doesn't trigger. So it doesn't automatically record motion. But I'm watching it actively and I'm looking at the screen and suddenly there's this yellowish light, this disc that just kind of appears on the left-hand corner of the sky. And I'm thinking to myself, what the heck is that? And before I can hit the record button, as I'm pressing down, getting ready to press down on the record button, it's gone. It just zips off.
Mm-hmm.
Like, are you kidding me? I could have had a great photograph. What? To this day, I still don't know what that was. I mean, was it a camera glitch? I have to ask myself. You know, I'm a scientist. I'm trying to think every rational explanation for it. And there is none. I can't think of a single explanation of why that would have happened. There's no way. And it hasn't happened on any of the other cameras. It was just a one-time incident. And the cameras are still, they still act in crazy sort of ways. Even with updated firmware and patches and every other thing you can think of, they still, on occasion, do very strange things.
You're explaining something like Skinwalker Ranch, but also I've been to Mena, Arkansas with the Board Camp Crystal Mine. They have incredible, weird, unusual squatch kind of things that happen there. And that's part of it. And you can't explain it. That's the whole point. It's either you experience it or you don't. And so you just kind of let it play out and see where it's going. But with the other thing about this is that you're trying to actively monitor it. And let's just go back. Jackson Earth Restoration and Research Center, 160 acres. And the goal here is to help restore, heal, claim the land, and leave it better than you found it. Okay. So, and there's crystal all over. We also talked about that ahead of time. You were talking about these giant crystals. That's also huge in terms of sighting locations. And that's another element that I think, you know, you just stumbled into something, and I don't think it was an accident, that gives you some kind of feedback on what you're doing and how it helps. And it also plays with you. It's entertaining, okay?
It is. The first time I was up on the property, I stumbled, I actually tripped over this giant piece of rose quartz that was about, I don't know, 4 feet long, just kind of sitting out there. And it looked like no one had been out on the property for hundreds of years. But, you know, the weird thing is that we have cliffs on the property. We have these giant boulders that are the size of SUVs, and some are even the size of houses that are out there. Some of them are even scattered in weird shapes, like we've got kind of a Stonehenge sort of thing happening with these giant boulders that just happen to be in a circular shape. Anyway, all of these crystals and quartz just littering the ground. You can actually see it from space. When you look at it at the property from Google Earth and you zoom down, you can see a lot of like little white flecks of milk quartz and a few other things. And some of the boulders and rocks that we have, honestly, if you didn't know any better, you would think that they were walls, you know, because they're, you know, cut in certain ways and eroded in certain ways, but they actually look like, you know, they were placed there, one box on or one block on top of another, in these very strange sort of shapes, like, you know, it used to be a wall, but I mean, obviously they're not. They're just, you know, it's volcanic activity and, you know, geology at work. But like I said, if you didn't know any better, you would think that there was once a structure there.
But even then, that's convenient because that sets up some kind of a space that might be in some way receptive to these kinds of activities.
It's possible.
Birds and bats, you talked about them disappearing and you could see them going into the side of a mountain. Let's hear about that.
Yeah. Well, apparently the state of Arizona has 800 volcanoes, and you can see some of the cones as you're flying over the state of Arizona. If you're looking out the window seat of a plane, you can see quite a few. the Aquarius Mountains where we are was kind of a runoff area for some of magma lava that, you know, Poi Poi, some of these, you know, these different different lava tubes and things like that. So I believe that there is a cavern on the property. And I believe that because as I was walking down the wash, I would see these birds or bats. I could not tell which, you know, which it was because they're kind of far away. But they kept appearing like from out of nowhere and flying in these very weird and strange sort of patterns, almost like starlings, you know, doing something crazy and, you know, up in weird shapes. And then they would disappear back into the mountain. And I started thinking, where are they going? There's so many birds. I should at least be able to hear them. I should at least be able to see some evidence of them. So I would walk the ridges and I would try and find them. And it's, to be fair, it is a big property. So I haven't quite found it yet, but somewhere on the property, on one of the large hills that we have, there is an entrance to maybe a cavern for either birds or bats. And it could be bats because of the time of day that it was, because it, you know, sun was going down and, you know, it was a certain time of day. So I believe it might've been bats, but I'm certainly not going to do like a Winnie the Pooh kind of thing and go crawling around inside of some tiny little hole to see if I can find a cavern. I just don't see myself doing that.
If you do video, okay. That's just,
okay.
It might've well captured on video. Okay. Now we got to get to the cattle because you don't have cattle. Okay. But then again, you do.
No.
You do. They seem to like you, or they like your property. And so you've been posting video of the cattle and talking about the music, trying to help, you know, get the cattle to relocate. And then you discover that actually there are certain things the cattle like and things that they don't. And when they get upset, then, you know, things happen. So why don't you, because that's, I love that. I'm so thrilled. It was like, oh, these are fun.
You know, they're very sweet because, I mean, they're coming from different cattle ranches. There's at least two cattle ranches in the area. And the cows, they just kind of come over. I've only met a couple of the neighbors. You have to remember the neighbors in this area are like, you know, 4 or 5 miles away in either direction. So it's not like a regular suburban neighborhood where you can go over to Joe's next door and ask, hey, is this your cow? But these cows just kind of roam around and they follow the wash. They love the wash. And, you know, at first I thought, oh my gosh, these cows are going to eat my trees because I'm planting trees. And so far, so good. They haven't really touched the trees and I've been able to protect them, but they are hanging out in the wash. Now, they didn't do that before. I mean, I had the cameras on for a very long time, but the moment that they just kind of stumbled upon the property and they started licking the camera and they found it, I'm like, these cows got to go. So I'm trying to scare them. And I played all kinds of noises and things like that. They didn't seem to be affected. They seemed to be interested in it, like if it's television or radio.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, let me play some music for them and see how they like that. So I started playing things like Vivaldi and Strauss, Johann Strauss and Shostakovich and a few others. And man, they were really enthralled. They would sit there and look at the camera. And one cow like lifts his head and starts moving his lips like he's trying to sing or something. And it's just so strange. But, you know, they started expecting it.
Yeah.
That was, I guess, is a big mistake on my part, because every time they would come to this thing, they would like nudge it, like trying to turn the camera on. Like, hey, where's our music, man? And, you know, the moment that the music didn't appear, they got angry. And we had a young bull come out and we tried to scare him off with like the sounds of whistles and barking dogs and things like that. He was very aggressive and he came back with friends. And when he came back with three other bulls, they knocked the camera down. It's like right now, in fact, even at this very moment, it's like laying on its side in the wash. And we've got to have somebody go out there and pick it up and remount it.
I think the critics have spoken. It's like he said, I'm gonna get the pros on this. It's not just me, it's me and my buddies. We all agree, and you are done until you play the stuff we want.
These are gangster cows, man.
Apparently they've got a posse. Well, okay, so that's what's so, I think, is fascinating about this. The other thing is, though, that you've got your 501c3, because you wanted to do more than just steward the land. You wanted to do more and to offer people a way to experience this as well, in a way that's a memorial, a recognition, yeah, a legacy project. So let's hear more about that. Well, maybe, I don't know if we should hear about Jackson first, because Jackson's like the little spokes dog. But
oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that is
Dr. Jackson, by the way.
Oh, excuse me.
Dr. Jackson. Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone gets that wrong. Dr. Jackson. I don't know if you've ever watched Stargate, but there's a character called Dr. Daniel Jackson. He was an archaeologist. My dog Jackson likes to dig. You know, I'm thinking archaeologist, Dr. Jackson, it just kind of fits. So.
Perfect. Yes. I'm very familiar with that series, all three or four versions of it.
Well, every time we go on a walk and I call his name Jackson, it's like we're on some adventure together, you know, so it's kind of fun. But yeah, the trees, we, you know, my son with his cancer, my bout with cancer, I started thinking, what can we do? And my son and I had to have that very important and uncomfortable-ish conversation. I want to say it's uncomfortable. It's a bittersweet conversation. It's bitter because we know that the end is going to happen. But we also know on the sweet end that there's a plan. We know that when he does pass, we wanted to do something special for him. And that was, you know, plant a tree. We wanted him to be part of the property, you know, so he'd be with us, you know, as long as we were there.
Yeah.
But at the same time that my son was diagnosed with cancer, I have a friend, Tanisha. She lives in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Her son, Jelani, developed a very rare renal cancer that only affects like a very small percentage of children. It's African-American youth between the ages of 15 and 20. It's very similar to sickle cell disease. So both of our sons had cancer at the same time, but Jelani, he didn't make it. He went downhill very fast. And I told Tanisha, because we were planning this for my son to put a tree for him, I told Tanisha, you know what? Let's plant a forest for Jelani. Let's plant a full acre of trees for just Jelani. We'll call it Jelani's Corner as a way of paying tribute to him, because she was, you know, she's very devastated. She's very sad. And I wanted to do something to reach out and comfort her and just let her know that I could feel, I wish that there was something I could do. And I also felt guilty because my son was still alive. You know, I mean, how do you compare that when both of your kids have cancer, one dies and one is still kind of around? I mean, how do you come to terms with that? It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But we did create a 1 acre of the 160-acre property. We're calling it Jelani's Corner in his honor. And after that, other people said, hey, you know, I know someone who passed away, or my pet Henry passed away. Will you plant a tree for him? And I said, absolutely. I'm going to plant the trees anyway. So the 501c, the reason for the nonprofit organization is so that I could do all of this stuff legit. I can plant the trees and make it a forest, fight climate change, and honor some people who deserve to be honored. Because, you know, there are too many people in this world that have lived good lives. Some people just get ignored by life in general. They're not worthy of bronze plaques or massive statues or, you know, cliff faces and things like that. Most people don't get those, you know, that pomp and circumstance that comes with being famous or, you know, what we consider to be important. But they are important and they deserve to be memorialized somehow, some way. And this is just a small way that they can be memorialized. In fact, I'm putting time capsules with each one of the tree. So people that want to dedicate a tree will put something inside of this time capsule that's kind of a keepsake for just that particular person. So that if maybe someday they want to come out and visit the property using the coordinates and dig up their little time capsule, they'll have something there to remember them by. And that tree is always going to be a representation of the person that was lost.
They can find it on a map too. Google.
Yes.
See, that's cool because, you know, you're going to plant a tree and it's a memorial, and you, as a person who would like to honor whoever you've lost, you want to know where they are in a way. I mean, I know that they aren't with their headstone or their grave. I know that part is not there, but my memory and my honoring of them, that spot should be someplace I can locate.
Yeah, but, you know, cemeteries and graveyards, there's a big difference between the two. The graveyard is where you've got people buried at a house of worship. The cemetery is kind of like a free-for-all for everybody. But we forget that when the body is gone and the soul is still there, you know, the essence of that person is still around, still very much inside of our hearts, inside of our minds, inside of our memories. You don't necessarily need to tear down an entire forest for a headstone and a casket. You know, I mean, I know that we do miss the bodies and we do miss the flesh of the people that we love. I get that. That is a very strong connection to be able to go to a place where you know that the physical remains of someone is still there. But it's more powerful to keep them in your hearts, in your minds, and act in ways that you think that would make them proud. You know, to extend your love for them to the love for other people. And doing this for the trees, it's not just for you and I. I mean, it's not for our generation. It could be for a generation of children that had their parents haven't even met yet, or parents that haven't even been born yet. I don't know, maybe two or three generations from now, someone's going to sit underneath one of our trees and be grateful that the trees are there, but the trees are only going to exist because of what we're doing today. By doing this today, it gives the trees an opportunity to grow and to flourish and who knows, 20, 30 years from now, you know, this massive forest could exist. And it's a forest of all of these souls that were lost and being remembered or memorialized in some important way.
I like the energy part of it, because as you focus on your living legacy, that tree is alive. And so it has an energy that's a very special energy, and it's contributing. It's rebirthing this energy and giving it back to the land, to the people, to the space. So for me, when I go to a cemetery, there's a whole different atmosphere around it. And some of it, it's just it doesn't have that same vibrancy. Okay. But when you're talking about a living forest, a living legacy, a garden, a sacred space, there's a whole different feeling. And so if you go online to check out your,
well, we're calling them legacy trees. So if you go to our website, there is a drop down under one of our menus that will take you to the legacy tree. So you can put in your loved one's name and your email address, because with an email address, we're able to take a photo of the tree planting and any video that we might do. And we send that to the people. There's also a certificate that we give them with the coordinates of where that specific tree is so they can hold on to it. We'll have a database very soon that people will be able to access online. So if you want to basically look for your relative or your loved one, you'll be able to just type in their name and boom, it just pulls up the coordinates. So if you ever forget or lose the paper or whatever, you'll always have some kind of a reminder. And finally, we also have these small engraved boxes with the coordinates on it that we give away to people that donate these trees so that they, it's a very small box. It's about the size of maybe twice the size of a matchbox. It has the coordinates and the name, and it gives you an opportunity to put a little something inside of that box so you can kind of keep it with you and, you know, use it as a keepsake.
Okay. Again, Jackson Earth Restoration Project. And I've looked at the content that you have on YouTube. That's what I was checking out, was all the videos on YouTube. And you also have Instagram and Facebook, all the usual social media contacts, and Buy Me a Coffee. Yeah. And also Blue Sky. So a lot of ways to connect.
Blue Sky is my main social media platform, and Instagram. I do have the Facebook account and I do have the YouTube, but you know, I'm just, like I said, I'm not really part of the whole social scene yet. I'm still kind of learning. I'm getting my feet wet. And I'm learning a little bit about what it takes to run some of these platforms. I would love to be able to turn those platforms over, but, you know, right now I just can't. I mean, there's so much to do. I had no idea what I was getting myself into when I bought this land. My dream was to just go out and just do it, you know, and then suddenly people started taking an interest and, you know, you've got people asking you questions. Well, have you wanted to do this? Do you want to do that? Let's do this. And people started kind of engaging and stepping into, you know, my little bubble, and I had to expand my bubble, you know, a little bit more. There's more and more people that are coming and everybody's got an idea, and I'm trying to do it all, but I, you know, can only do so much. And every day I get like a new suggestion of something that I should do on the property. I mean, yesterday I was at a place called the Emerald Tea House, and I was told that we need to talk about medicinal plants and herbs, and I'm fine with that. How to make teas from some of the things that are in nature. I'm fine with that too. But I don't think that I necessarily have the brain space, you know, to kind of expand on everything that I'm doing to include stuff like that. I would rather turn these beautiful ideas, these very good ideas, over to the people that have them and say, here, you know, you have the latitude that you need and 160 acres to do what you want. Go ahead. Let's do it.
Yeah. I'm thinking UFO sightings, maybe, you know. Put more cameras out there, hidden cameras.
You should see, my God, you should see the stars on this property.
Oh, I know.
Is absolutely amazing views.
Photography.
I stayed out there one night just because I just wanted to see what it looked like. And you can see the Milky Way, like 3 a.m. in the morning. You could see the Milky Way on the mountains. You could see the mountain peaks on the other side. The nearest city is Kingman. That's closer going out toward the Las Vegas kind of area. Mm-hmm. And I'm staying out there, and it is freakishly quiet. It is very cold whenever you're up there because it's a pretty high elevation. I'm watching the stars and I'm like, I cannot believe how many stars there are in the sky. There's no light pollution and things like that, except the pollution that I'm bringing with, like, you know, flashlights and stuff.
Yeah. But you're asking for butterflies. Okay. So you're, you know, at the same time you've got your science station out there. So you're contributing, and your flashlight at night, you can turn that off.
You got to use your little red flashlight, your red lens on your flashlight, you know, kind of adjust your eyes. But it is amazing. And yes, there could be astronomy events out there, UFO sightings. I mean, there is weird stuff that happens in the sky that you just can't explain. And as a scientist that works with satellites, I can recognize a lot of the stuff that's in the sky. For instance, the Starlink satellites, I recognize those when I see them. But, you know, some people will look at it like, what's that? You know, must be from late reticula. You know, I mean, it's sometimes it's very unusual. But there are times, like in the broad daylight, where this thing I'm watching on camera just poof, it just appears and then just zips off before I could do anything. And those are the kinds of things that I want to learn more about, you know.
That's the whole thing, too. Like, there are a lot of times when you think you see something, and then it stops your camera comes back on, you see it again, it stops your camera. The biggest complaint is, why didn't you take a picture? And well, there's one thing, sometimes it's the complete and total awe and shock of what the heck? And then you think about taking a picture. Okay, that little infinitesimal moment of pause destroys your ability to get whatever it was because you were not anticipating it. And that's a lot of times that's how it happens.
Well, I felt like Scooby-Doo, you know, when Scooby-Doo and Shaggy are like, you know, running away from something, they're kind of like suspended midair. Their legs are just like going in midair and then finally they take off. That's what I felt like. I'm like, I want to take a picture of this. And I'm like, no, try to hit the camera. Slow bam, up. It's gone. It's like, you had your chance, buddy. You should have been recording from the beginning, you know?
Well, that's why I say it plays with you. Because technically, sometimes you're not going to get the picture. No matter how perfect, you've got it, you snapped it, it's there, it should be good. And you look at it and there's nothing on the image.
And those cameras playing havoc on me with, you know, just taking photographs instead of video. It makes me wonder what was on the video. Now, one weird thing I can tell you, this is very unusual, extremely unusual. And I don't know what is going on here. It kind of scares me a little bit.
Okay.
The GoldenEye People camera. When I went back to the property on the last batch, I had to repair the GoldenEye camera because it shut down, the GoldenEye People camera. I'm climbing the hill. I get up, I get the camera, and I find that the solar panel has been unplugged. I mean, literally unplugged. And then I open it up. You have to like pull these two latches off the side. And the camera's been switched off in the off position. You have to do that with your fingers. You can't, this is not like a software glitch. This is something physical that has to be done. So then I say, okay, well, let me pull the media card and see what the heck's going on. Media card's gone completely. Mm. There is nobody out there on this property. This is 160 acres in the middle of nowhere. And this camera is camouflaged as it is, and it's blending in. How is it that somebody is going to go out there on the property, find the camera, for some reason unplug just that specific solar panel, switch the thing off, and take the media card? Why? It doesn't make any sense to me. So it kind of scares me a little bit that maybe there's some nefarious stuff going on out there. I don't know. I can't say for sure. Maybe it's not nefarious. Maybe, you know, maybe it's something else. But it kind of rubs me the wrong way. That was the last camera that I had to install on the day before I had to leave on one of my trips. And I was so proud that I was able to make the time to get up that hill because it's a very difficult climb. Mm-hmm. Get up that hill, put that camera up there, show that it's operational. Got pictures of myself walking up and down the hill, video. And I'm thinking, this is great. And it lasted for a very long time. It lasted for months. And then suddenly, you know, unplugged, turned off, car gone. What happened?
Good question.
I still don't know. The closest neighbor next to me where that camera would have been is a Bureau of Land Management land. You know, it's like federal land. Unless there was somebody from the BLM that was out there that saw the camera and did something to it, I can't explain it.
Maybe they thought they got a UFO. I have a relative.
I don't know.
I'm serious. I had a relative. And what happened is he was taking pictures. He saw a UFO. And then two people showed up. And they asked him if he saw it. He knew at that time the answer was no. Now, there's never a guarantee that just because you take a picture of something, it's going to be on the film. Well, it was on the film. And since he said no, he got to keep the film and the camera. They didn't take it. And so that maybe there was something interesting that was there and somebody might have collected. If we want to put somebody managed to be out there in the middle of nowhere looking at the stars and taking pictures of satellites or whatever and, you know, happen to see your camera. I don't know. I think that media card might have had something cool on it and whatever decided that it was worth pilfering.
I was wondering why it malfunctioned. I thought that maybe, you know, it could have been like some critical failure from like lightning or know, really bad storm damage. Maybe it had fallen off of the post that I had it mounted to. I mean, there was so many physical things that could have happened, but to see that it was still in place, not touched from the post that it was attached to, other than the unplugged solar panel, the turned off switch, and the card missed. You know, it really bothers me because I really, really, really wanted to see what's on that card. Now, I have a new GoldenEye camera, and I've hidden the GoldenEye People camera in a much better place. I mean, unless they find this one, and I've got everything going to the cloud now. So, mm-hmm. I mean, if anything goes to the cloud, I don't have to worry about a media card or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I'm keeping a little bit closer tabs on it this time.
I will tell you, I'm actually more on the side of the Sasquatch thing or whatever kind of an interdimensional something, because that's what they do in those spaces. Those kinds of anomalous things happen. There's no explanation. There's nothing that can possibly interfere, and yet it does. And so I'm more looking for something unusual, especially when you're recording, going into the wash and feeling like it was you were stuck and had to stay there, couldn't get out, got the phone call, and then you're unstuck. These things happen. I'm for finding out more about what the unusual stuff is that's going on out there. I think you've got a fabulous location, and I think it's wonderful that people can dedicate a tree, and whether it's for a pet, because that's also a possibility, you know, that this is a living legacy.
The next big tree planting expedition that we're going to do is this November 2026. So if anyone wants to volunteer to go out there to the property with us as we do this big tree planting thing, we're hoping to plant 1,000 trees. We're also putting in things called dirt lockers. It's an anti-erosion sort of thing that will help us with the trees. And we're also putting in some extra protection from the cows, you know, so that the cows won't karate chop the cameras or, you know, nibble on the trees or anything like that. So if anybody wants to volunteer, I hope that some of your listeners might, you know, participate in that. Maybe I hope that they also dedicate a tree. So that would be nice.
Oh, that would be excellent. Well, I also would like you to play more music for the cows. Okay. I think since they have told you what they like, that you could help them feel better while they're out there in the middle of nowhere being ignored and, you know, living the life of Riley, and just entertain them. Just make them feel welcome. And then maybe they won't get the bulls in to upset the apple cart.
Well, I would say that they're welcome, but I think that it's more like, am I welcome on the property? You know, I mean, long before I bought this land, you know, there are creatures and critters that just like, you know, habitat that land. And sure, I may own it in principle and legally and, you know, all of that stuff. But, you know, the land really belongs to the land. It belongs to the creatures that are out there. And I'm really hoping that with this reforestation thing on the 160 acres, that it brings even more creatures out there. I mean, we have all kinds of animals. I mean, we've got cougars, bobcats, coyotes, lots of different rabbits. We have roadrunners, you name it. There's lots and lots of beautiful little creatures that are out there. And I just want it to be a safe place for them. I want it to be a nice sanctuary for other people to just rest and unwind and, you know, take their mind off of things and visit someone that they love. I want it to be kind of a learning campus where people can learn about what it takes to stop desertification. Because, I mean, on fertile ground, you know, I don't know which side of the coast you're on. You're what, East Coast or Central?
The Midwest.
You have lots of forests around you?
Midwest.
Okay, so you have forests, right?
Woods.
Yeah, yes. You've got woods. Okay. Well, on the East Coast, there's a lot of woods and a lot of forests. And then way out west, there's, you know, the big trees in the forest and things like that. But what happens when those beautiful, rich areas are torn down for, like, you know, a parking lot or a shopping mall or whatever? You know, the land will remember. The good news is that the earth will be fine over the long haul. But the bad news is that humanity will not. We won't be around to see the earth heal, because the earth will heal all by itself. And what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to keep us all, you know, in the running for, you know, wiser days where we can treat the land with a little bit more respect and dignity. I think it would be nice for decent human beings and humanity to continue on. But if we keep going in the direction that we're going right now, and we keep turning over the keys to the castle to large corporations that just, you know, take and take and take from the environment, we're not going to have anything left. And it's very sad. And it takes a very long time to produce topsoil. Gosh, 50 to 100 years just to get like an inch of topsoil. You know, there's a lot of work that has to be done. And the only thing that's going to help is with more trees and more responsibility.
It's also the ecosystem, the entire, you know, everything that survives on that.
Yeah, exactly. When they bring beavers back in, they've already proven it. When they bring beavers back into rivers, that the entire area benefits. like 40, 50 miles in Nevada has started to restore just because they brought in beavers. They hunted beavers almost to the point of extinction. And when they brought the beavers back, they started healing the landscape, and they started healing this, what was a desert land, started turning into lush and green little forests on the sides. And, you know, and it's moving out further and further just because this very important keystone species is back. Now, I want to do the same thing for our property. But the point is that, you know, we sit around and we debate all the time. Is this climate thing real? Is it not real? We go back and forth. We talk. I have no control over what people say in those debates. All I know is that I can do something with what I've got. So I'm choosing to not debate and get involved in all that stuff. I'm choosing to instead invest my time and energy and effort into planting trees because I know, as a scientist, I know it will work. I know that it will make a difference.
I want to ask, this is personal. You, as a kid, then later on, you had a near-death experience.
Mm-hmm.
When NDE people have that shift, sometimes they're aware of it, other times they're not. But I do think, having done a lot of reading about this and research, and PMH Atwater, who's, I've interviewed her a couple of times, she's done work with children to see what makes it different for a child to have these kinds of experiences. And she said, some of the stuff she says is that sensitivity level, that awareness level, that insight is increased with those kinds of experiences. Do you think any of this has been a result of those early life near-death experiences?
As you frame it that way, I believe you're right. But as a child, I don't remember the stories that you normally hear, the tunnel of light or anything like that. I don't remember anything like that. But I do remember when I was alive being extremely sensitive to the emotions of other people, always trying to keep myself out of trouble. I came from a very violent and abusive sort of childhood. And it was a struggle. And I never fit in. I was the towhead. You know, everyone else had like black hair or whatever, and I was the one running around with like little blonde hair. And like, where did that guy come from? Mm-hmm. Obviously, he looks very different from everybody else. Where did he come from? Did you steal him? Yeah, so it's very different. But I've always been, I don't know, sensitive in a way to how certain people feel and emotions. And I think that probably has a lot to do with being like observant of the behavior of other people. You know, trying to kind of keep myself out of trouble. I don't know if it's like a sense of something a little more spiritual or if it's something more psychological. I can't really tell. But I have had some interesting experiences that might suggest that, you know, it is spiritual. I can't honestly say, yes, 100%, this is absolutely spiritual. And I can't point to any one particular religion, faith or source or whatever. I just feel it. You know, you have this feeling that something is different. You don't know what it is. You can't really describe it to other people. Many people can't relate to it. But whenever you have it in your heart, you just know. You know yourself. What was that? That's a line from The Matrix. For instance, when I was in my early 20s, I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have very much money in the bank. But I was getting fuel one day at a gas station, and I had this overwhelming sensation and this voice, in a way, tell me, help him. I didn't know who it was talking about. I thought it was me. I'm like, yeah, heck, I need help myself, blah, 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 you know, being kind of a jerk. And this man comes along and he's like digging around for money and coins. And I'm scared, you know, I'm thinking, you know, this guy's going to come and ask me for money. I don't really want to be part of this. I don't have any money, yada, yada, yada. Every excuse you could think of. Then I looked at him and he was like digging through the vacuum cleaners because apparently when you're vacuuming your cars, a lot of people vacuum up change. And this guy was looking for change. He was kind of like prospecting. It was very clever. But something kept telling me, you've got to help this guy. And I got in my car and I drove away and I kept feeling it. You got to go back for this guy. You got to go back for this guy. So finally I'm like, okay, screw it. I turned around. I almost got into an accident on the way. I found the guy across the street. Only this time, instead of saying, I don't have any money, I went inside. I used the machine, the ATM, and I pulled out my last 20 bucks. And I said, hey man, let's go get some food. And he got in my car. He smelled absolutely terrible. His body odor, I mean, he smelled like feces. He smelled like BO. His mouth, he only had a few teeth in his head. This guy, he was gaunt. He looked like he was suffering from scurvy. I mean, this guy even looked dangerous in a way. And most people in my family would say, you've got to stay away from people like that. They're absolute bad people. You know, they would try and scare you away from helping someone. But something told me to help this guy. So I took him to McDonald's. He couldn't really eat the food. He had to kind of gnaw on it. So he had to get like something soft. So he asked for Big Macs and he just kind of gummed them to death. And he had a drink and I gave him the change that was left over for this. And he told me to take him to this secret place where he could jump on a train because he was apparently a hobo. And he said, yeah, if you go there into this little alley here, they don't check the rails. So you can drop me off there and I can jump on the next train. And I asked him, I said, how did you end up like this? And he said, you know, some people are just like me. They're only one paycheck away from being just like me. This man lost his house. He lost his wife. I mean, it was like tragic. Everything that he had, he lost. Once he lost his job and he couldn't pay his bills, you know, losing his house, his wife decided to pick the kids. He ends up sleeping behind a dumpster. And one day he just said enough. He got up, jumped on a train and just never looked back. So I tried to encourage him to go back and find his family, to reach out to find his family. Hopefully he did. You know, he looked like he was one sandwich away from just passing out and dying. And mm-hmm. I'm hoping that that act of generosity, that act of, you know, abandoning all of my fears and everything else, I'm hoping that that gave him just enough time to go and reach out to his family. Maybe he did. I don't know. I've never seen him again.
I read part of this in your book and that part where you had bought him a little sack, a little care package, and not just trying to do sending off with some orange juice and some water and, you know, a honey bun and something else. And then he tried to give you the money back because you put some money at the bottom of the sack. And he was like, oh, here, you forgot this. And so the soul of this man, genuine. And it's just the circumstances when he said one paycheck away. It's a heart connection. And whoever inspired you to help him, I think was helping both of you.
I just think that sometimes we just think differently from the masses. And I think the world really has a heart problem. We're not looking out for one another enough. We're always suspicious. We're always trying to be on top. We're trying to be the biggest, the best. I don't think that that's the case. I don't think that any of us should be trying, you know, outdo the other. In fact, I've never even liked sports. And that's one thing that used to get me in trouble as a kid. They're like, you don't like basketball? You don't like football? You don't like baseball? Why don't you like hockey? I said, well, because it's two teams and somebody has to lose. And I don't like the idea that someone's going to lose a game and give the other person a chance to gloat. You know, it should be just done for fun. And I used to get ridiculed all the time for thinking like that, especially back in the 70s. Because, you know, if you're in the 70s and you're growing up, you know, people look at you like you're a weak punk, you know, like, you know, you're worthless because you don't follow these sorts of things and you're just a weakling or whatever. You know, there's all kinds of disparaging things that people would say, you know, about you for not being butch and, you know, ultra macho and that sort of thing. But I've never really been that guy, man. I've always been like, you know, more concerned with the welfare of other people. And a lot of the times it's really hurt me quite a bit because you can help people so much. But then there are also people that are also exist in the world that will take advantage of it and they will make you a doormat and you can never, ever give enough to some people, no matter how much you want to. Sometimes you just have to stop.
Discernment, knowing you got the message and the message was a heart message. You followed it. The thing I've experienced with Sasquatch, which is really cool because I didn't think that that was possible. And then it happened. It was a telepathic message. And this is after I'd been educated about how this works. And I was walking again in the Ozarks and just, you know, going for a walk, got the dogs and everything. And I hear in my mind, I hear kind of a commentary. The commentary is quiet mind, open heart. And at the same time, the commentary is saying, you are full of stuff in a nice way. That our brain, we fill it with so much nonsense, constant jibber jabber. It was trying to say that isn't important. So out where you are, out in the beautiful, open, dark sky country, that's easier there to go and experience the quiet mind and open heart when you give yourself time, you know, to get away and to make space to have that knowing and that sense of wonder. There's just so much to be said with the opportunities we have right now to recognize these things and do something about it. You have a station, a little science station there, research. And this is what I thought was interesting because I don't know anything about it. Biocrust cultivation. I'm assuming that's topsoil. Mm-hmm. And then pollinator monitoring.
Yeah, well,
Yeah, well, yeah. See? and then disaster modeling and pollinator monitoring. So there's stuff going on there. You're making use of this space.
Yeah, I'm basically looking at what's missing in the soil, because it's easier to put back in the soil what was taken than it is to just, like, you know, indent it. If you know what's missing from the soil, then you can change it. And a lot of people look at the desert and they say, why the desert? And I keep telling them that the desert teaches you a lot more. Like, you know, when your trees are gone and all of this stuff is done, how are you going to rebuild? So you got to look and see what's missing and how to solve some of these problems. I mean, the microbes and everything that's happening inside of the soil. I mean, it wasn't always like that, you know? I mean, at one time, there are places in New Mexico that were underwater, that were part of an ocean, you know? And then it goes from an ocean to a glacier, from glacier to lakes, from lakes to, you know, to forest, from forest to grassland, and then to desert. And then it starts all over again. You know, the whole cycle just kind of shifts all over again. You know, how many times we've been around the entire Milky Way galaxy? There's something that's out there where it's called galactic weather that we're going to run into every now and then in a generation or two that will cause all kinds of calamity in the world. And we're just modeling just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, some of the small things that we do know about, things like the El Nino and La Nina weather cycles. We know about solar weather, like the solar min and solar max cycles that go through that also alter and change the weather. You know, we know some of these things, but we haven't quite made our way around the entire Milky Way galaxy because, you know, in a couple of generations, there's going to be more things that we have to discover. So every time the Earth goes around the Milky Way, as it's spinning around, there's always something new out there. If you can think of it like a season, you know, there's a big season that just kind of comes up where everything's fine. And then a season where everything happens that's bad for like many, many generations just because we're basically driving through the neighborhood, you know, on our little planet car.
I like what you've got on your YouTube page. And there are several. You talked about Jelani's Corner, the weather station. People can see what the weather station looks like, the drive out there. Also, Jackson gets a photo op. There's just a lot to kind of follow along as you continue to put these videos up and share what's going on. And again, the community volunteer program, when you're looking for people who feel called to it, to go out and do the planting event November 2026, so later this year.
I hope that some of your followers will join us out there. I really do. It would be extra special. It'd be great if you could go out there too. That would be nice.
Yes. It was really funny because just before I talked to you, I had this thing of, gosh, it would be nice to have a van that was kind of self-sufficient and it go out and be in the middle of nowhere. Had no idea why I'm thinking about that. And then you tell me about your property. It's out in the middle of nowhere. I'm thinking, okay, well, I can't afford a van like that, but I might be able to rent one.
Yeah. People do.
Yes. But, well, of course they do. That's the whole point. But that was, I thought, why was I even thinking about that? And then the call, it came from you.
Well, you're welcome out there anytime you want. Now, we do want to kind of keep the location, especially the Goldeneye people. We want to keep that kind of a deep secret because not only is it, you know, kind of a sacred space, but it's also a dangerous place because of the, you know, there's cliffs and things like that a person could easily fall off of. So, you know, we have to be very, very careful.
That snake is out there waiting.
Yeah. Now, we've shown some experiments where you can step on a rattlesnake 50 times and it won't bother you. It saves its venom for its prey. Uh-huh. But who in the world wants to sit there and step on a Mojave green snake 50 times? No, thanks. I'm not going to do that. You're good.
Okay. So, yes, it's a wild space. It's a beautiful space. Your website, you're on YouTube, and then the direct website to the project for people to check it out and find out more. Jackson Earth Restoration. It's Jackson and it's ERP.org.
Yep, that's right. ERP stands for Earth Restoration Project. When I got the domain, it was my only option. So it's JacksonERP.org.
I can share that picture. You said the clothing. What are they wearing?
They look like they're in a one piece, you know, kind of tan or almost the same color as their skin. It's like you can tell that they're wearing something. Uh-huh. But it's just like, you know, just one piece. I don't know really how to describe it. It's like a mechanic's outfit, I guess. Mm. Like, you know that they're wearing like some kind of an outfit or something. And most of the time in the dreams, it's usually too dark. Like I can look inside and I can see a glow inside of the cavern, but I don't know where the light's coming from. In other words, it's not really a flame, but there's some kind of a glow or something like that inside of this cave where you can see them and the silhouettes of them. And as they're walking along the ceiling and just defying gravity in a weird sort of way. I mean, wow. I haven't had the dreams since I actually closed on the property. I had many dreams of the property, mm-hmm. but specifically the GoldenEye people, when I closed on it, it was like, yes, you know, we've made some kind of connection. I feel like every time I get there, it doesn't matter how much stress I have, no matter what's going on in my life, the moment that I'm on that property, everything just melts away. And it's almost like seeing someone you love, like the GoldenEye people. Mm-hmm. It's almost like they're telling you hello, and you suddenly feel like, all the stress just melts away. Yeah. Like you're home, you know, you're here. We're embracing you. It's like their presence, but it's also the land. I don't know how to describe that any better.
You've done a great job. I'll put links in the description for the show and put that picture up. Yeah, the wardrobe might be different, but these are friendly GoldenEye kids, GoldenEye people, and they're calling you to pay attention to the environment. There's so much going on here that we can change, and all we have to do is pick up a shovel or maybe even pick up the phone or make a little connection on the internet one way or the other. It's that easy.
Yeah, action. You know, we would rather make a difference than excuses. So, you know, just have to go out there and do it.
All right. Take care of the cows.
More clarinets and oboes coming their way.
Yes. Thank you.
There are times like in the broad daylight where this thing I'm watching on camera just poof, it just appears and then just zips off before I could do anything. And those are the kinds of things that I want to learn more about, you know.